Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Have you noticed when you read your local newspaper, there's plenty of national and regional stories, but coverage of your hometown is a little lacking? Or maybe when you turn on the local TV news, the graphics, the presentation, even the opening music is pretty similar.
Live from WTVO Rockford and your home team, Eyewitness News at 5 starts now.
You're watching your local news leader. This is WCIA 3 News at 10.
You're watching WMBD News, Central Illinois proud.
Live from our studios, you're watching Fox Illinois News at 9.
I don't know. Maybe we're missing something here. Live from Illinois Public Media, the 21st starts now. Okay, no. There are several reasons that TV news looks, sounds, and feels so similar. And among them are that in 2021, just a handful of companies own local TV stations in Illinois. Likewise with local newspapers. Back in October, as part of our week-long inquiry into who's in charge of the news, we took on that question directly and literally by looking at ownership of TV stations and newspapers in Illinois. I was joined by David Folkenflik, who covers the media for NPR News, and also Anne-Marie Lipinski. In a 30-year career at the Chicago Tribune, she rose from intern to editor-in-chief. She left the paper in 2008 and is now curator of the Nieman Foundation for Journalism at Harvard. Listeners, as I mentioned, our show is on tape for the holidays. We will be back with a new program this Thursday. In the meantime, you can let us know what you thought of our conversation by sending an email. The address is talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow.org. Or you can tweet to us in real time at 21st Show. That's at 21st Show. Okay, here now is my conversation with David Folkenflik and Anne-Marie Lipinski. David, I want to begin with you. First, let's take TV stations. In Illinois, the majority of downstate stations are owned by three companies. There's Nexstar Media Group, Sinclair Broadcasting Group, and Gray Television. So, David, let's talk about all three. Nexstar has nearly 200 TV stations nationwide. In Illinois, it owns stations in Chicago, Rockford, Peoria, Bloomington, the Champaign, Decatur, Springfield market, the Quad Cities, and St. Louis and Terre Haute, Indiana, which serve Illinois because they're on our borders. Why does it matter that one company owns so many TV stations and operates so many newsrooms in Illinois?
Well, on the one hand, you know, you may see some benefit. Viewers of those stations could argue, look, our news team is supported by a deeper bench of reporters around the region. They may be able to tease out dynamics that are happening that cross jurisdictional borders. Something doesn't necessarily only affect one city or one county in Illinois, right? It might affect more than that. You might be able to pool together resources and have more muscular reporting in Springfield. That could be a benefit. So, you know, this is not all necessarily bad. But what it also suggests, to my mind, is a strong degree of uniformity of coverage. You're going to have the same people effectively making the same kinds of judgments in all these seemingly disparate markets about what to cover. You know, one of the great things about the American system and the capitalist system is this idea of competition is baked in. Well, if you don't have, even in different markets, different ownership, then you're not bringing to play different sensibilities, different layers of expertise, different areas of focus, and therefore serving people more broadly. You might, if somebody decides to give, let's say for argument's sake, state law enforcement officials a pass on certain issues, people in other markets around the state are less likely to do so too, because they're run by the same shop effectively. And I think what you see is ultimately less accountability journalism, fewer differing choices made, a more narrow focus on the kinds of stories that are covered and the way in which they are covered. And ultimately, I think consolidation typically serves the audience, which is to say the citizens of Illinois, less well.
And we also heard from some people in our texting group, Text the 21st. Somebody wrote in to say, I get my local news from WCIA, local CBS affiliate. We like this station because it centers in Champaign, where we live. Though at times it seems they favor a more conservative bias on some subjects, we appreciate their coverage. Thank you for that comment. We should mention WCIA is owned by Nexstar Media. The Gray Television Group has 161 stations nationwide, including Peoria, Rockford, Quincy, the Quad Cities. And then there's Sinclair Broadcast Group. They have 185 TV stations across America. Here in Illinois, they have stations in Bloomington, Quincy, and again, the Champaign, Springfield, Decatur market, and St. Louis. David, Sinclair has attracted concerns about partisanship in its coverage. Can you talk about how conservative ideology is part of their content?
Yeah, you know, I've covered Sinclair going back to my earlier job for more than 20 years, back when I first started covering media at the Baltimore Sun. They're based in Baltimore County, just outside the city of Baltimore. They are owned and controlled, although publicly traded, controlled by the Smith brothers, four brothers there, major ownership stake there. And they're conservatives. They show that with the money that they give to Republicans on the state and national level. And they show that with the choices they make. They have sought to, as have some of these other major, major local TV groups through the waves of consolidation, they have sought to figure out ways to nationalize some of their coverage. It's, you know, one of the reasons you consolidate around Illinois and around the nation, if you're a TV group, is to save money. And then what you do is you standardize certain elements of your coverage, which makes it cheaper for each individual station to put a TV show on the, a TV news show on the air. Part of what Sinclair does is that it has opinion folks, largely, although not exclusively, from the right, show up making editorials or doing certain kinds of public affairs and seemingly documentary presentations. Even though there are at times liberal voices included, it's very much from the right. It's sort of, in some ways, Fox News Plus. In that regard, they hired folks from the Trump administration as political analysts. And Boris Epstein is one example of that, although clearly a highly partisan, non-journalistic figure. And I think Sinclair has shown itself time and again to be that way, even as on the local level, sometimes their television stations, including their flagship station in Baltimore, are capable of doing good journalism. But Sinclair has put, I think, its thumb on the scales over the years. In a, you know, I covered instances of this going back to the coverage of the Iraq War and of President George W. Bush's reelection bid against John Kerry, doing some phenomenally unfair and unfactual coverage of John Kerry to a degree that it was called out by their own Washington bureau chief, who was fired as a result. And there's been a consistency of form of that by Sinclair. One of the interesting things is when people attack the liberal mainstream media, there are reasons for that. There are outlooks and biases baked in, but oftentimes local news owners can be quite conservative. They're business people, but they also at times are, you know, reflect that in terms of their income brackets, their feelings on taxes and regulations, where they're more likely to get breaks from as they seek to acquire more properties. And sure enough, a lot of these major local TV endeavors betray a certain conservatism in their outlook.
Anne-Marie Lipinski, so we've been talking about television, and while there may be sort of fewer choices in local TV, there's certainly a lot of places you can get national news, right? TV, cable, streaming, digital. But when it comes to hyper-local coverage, if it's not from local TV, and as we've been talking about this week, shrinking local newspapers, where are people getting local news from, and what are some of the issues with that?
They're getting it from fewer and fewer places is the answer. So as with the television sector, which David just outlined, you know, you have these issues of increasingly generic coverage. You have, you know, narrow political perspective, but you also have just fewer and fewer people. The reason for this consolidation is not just political, it's economic. It's to save money. And the way you save money is by, you know, limiting the number of people you employ. That's where the greatest cost is in local news. And so you have disappearing newsrooms and you have shrinking newsrooms. You know, since 2008, newsroom employment in the US fell 26%. So that's a loss of 30,000 jobs. And the worst of it was is in the newspaper sector. And so much of that is local. And journalism jobs in that area plummeted by 57%. So, I mean, just imagine that. I mean, you yesterday, Brian, you know, interviewed some veterans of the State Journal Register. And you outlined, and they outlined, how the staff shrunk from 70 people to 9. And I think you equated it to like trying to field a, you know, an NFL football team with 6 people.
Exactly.
That's precisely the scenario in most local newsrooms now.
And so people are turning to Facebook, right? They're going to these sort of online, social media, really, not just online news sources, but they're just finding local stuff on social media. What are some of the issues with that?
Well, so newspapers and other media organizations have used social media sites to amplify their reporting and to try to increase their audiences, because that's where you're going to find a lot of, a lot of audience. But the problem is on, if you're picking up something like the State Journal Register, there's the masthead and it stands for a certain quality or, a certain sort of personification of local values. Same with the Chicago Tribune or any local newspaper. You know, Facebook is not that. Facebook is a vast community where you can find credible information, but it abuts next to absolutely non-credible information, disinformation, misinformation, propaganda, call it what you want, lies. And I think it's hard for a lot of average readers to parse that and to understand the difference between journalism of verification, as my mentor used to call it, and gossip or lie. So things that have the appearance of being, something that is locally reported. Sometimes these Facebook posts will carry the name of what sounds like a credible news organization, but it's not reported information. It's often just conjecture or worse.
Yeah. And I'll just do a little forward promotion. Listeners, stay tuned. Later this week, we're going to have a conversation about trying to sift through what is and maybe is not a legitimate news outlet when you see it on Facebook. Paul is on the line from Sycamore. Paul, thank you for calling in.
Yeah, good morning. Great topic that I've been annoyed by for a long time. And I thought I would take you back and maybe ask you to talk a little bit about the history of this.
Sure.
I remember distinctly many, many moons ago that the FCC had a rule that there was only 5 stations were allowed under the same ownership. And that changed. I can't remember how long ago it changed, and I'm sure you people can. But the end result was, at least for me on radio, major conglomerates started buying up all the stations across the country to the extent that I hardly listen to commercial radio anymore because they all sound the same. They're all programmed by someone like Clear Channel Communications from someplace in Washington, D.C. or New York, and every station carries the same program. And it's pretty boring listening to scan across the dial. So I was hoping maybe you could just give a little bit of history about that. And
all right,
I'll hang up and listen. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Paul. We appreciate the call. David Folkenflik, how about that? And I should mention we have about 90 seconds until we need to take a break here. But the FCC rules, I think the Fairness Doctrine, some people might remember that there used to be something called that. What happened?
Yeah, so, I mean, to say it briefly, there's been, in the Reagan years, Clinton years, and subsequent kind of a relaxation of limitations on ownership to the degree to which folks were able to buy more and buy more, particularly backed at times by private equity groups in local news, in radio stations, in TV. And it's made an extraordinary consolidation of ownership rules, sometimes set aside, sometimes simply ignored. And yet here we are, where you have a decreasing number of owners making for a homogenization, as our caller says, on radio as well as newspapers and on TV. The counter argument, of course, is online on digital, Spotify and elsewhere. There are a lot of new competitors in the realm when it comes to radio.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, you'll hear more of our conversation with David Folkenflik, who covers the media for NPR News, and Anne-Marie Lipinski, who's curator of the Nieman Foundation for Journalism at Harvard. They joined us back in October to discuss the consolidation of local media and specifically the handful of companies that now control local TV news and newspapers, and the effects of that when it comes to coverage of communities. This is all part of our week-long look back at our Who's in Charge of the News conversations we had back in October. And I should say we're going to be back live on the air. We're planning to be back live anyway on Thursday of this week for 1 year since the Capitol insurrection. And we do want to hear from you. Where were you then? Where are you now? Are you more or less optimistic about the future of American democracy 1 year after that terrible event in Washington? Let us know. You can leave us a voicemail anytime. 217-300-2121 is our voicemail line. 217-300-2121. You can also send us a voice memo by email or just a plain old text email. The address for that is talk@21stshow.org. That's talk@21stshow.org. And finally, you can sign up for our texting group to participate in our conversations. The way to do that is to send the word talk to 217-803-0730. Text the 21st by sending the word talk to 217-803-0730. More to come with David Volkenflik and Anne-Marie Lipinski after a short break. This is the 21st. Stay with us. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. If you're just joining us, you're hearing my interview with David Volkenflik, who covers the media for NPR News, and Anne-Marie Lipinski, who's curator of the Nieman Foundation for Journalism at Harvard. She was previously the editor, the top editor at the Chicago Tribune. She left there in 2008. They joined us back in October to talk about the consolidation of local media, and specifically the handful of companies that now control local TV news and newspapers, and the effect that has on coverage of communities. Let's get back to that conversation. And I want to begin this next part of our conversation with another text message. We heard from John in Iliopolis in Sangamon County, who said, "I have not watched a local TV newscast in years. Was the standard thing growing up and when I was younger. Digital newspapers and NPR Illinois provide local news coverage for me now." So, John, thank you for the comment. David, let's talk about newspapers downstate. Gannett, which is a company used to be known as Gatehouse, they own 22 papers, including Rockford, Peoria, Springfield. Lee Enterprises has Bloomington and Decatur, Quad Cities. There's another company, Community Media Group, which owns newspapers in seven markets, including Champaign. What do we know about these companies?
We know about almost all of them. We know about almost all of them. That there's sort of been a rapacious pursuit of propping up the bottom line and then increasing profits through just deep and devastating cuts. You know, Gatehouse was formerly known as Gannett because it bought Gannett out, which itself was a giant and ailing newspaper company. There really was some journalism at the heart of Gannett still, you know, the parent company of USA Today. And it remains to be seen whether we feel that that is still the case after Gatehouse takes over, Gatehouse being a company that both was even more aggressive in cost cutting and has to justify the, you know, gaudy price tag of acquiring Gannett by making still more cuts. I mean, it just seems like an endless proposition. It's part of why consolidation is not something it's easy to be agnostic about, because it requires by its very logic for return to its investors that there be additional cuts, consolidations. Usually papers are printed now at places far from where they are delivered. Oftentimes you see news organizations losing their headquarters and a sense of community. Now we've learned during the pandemic, you can work remotely and still find ways to build teamwork. But if you do that for years, you may learn the kind of apprenticing and mentoring and the kind of benefit that you get from the institutional knowledge one typically has built up at newspapers. And let's remember, as much as I love public radio, and been here, 17 years next month, you know, newspapers tend to be the horses that drive and propel the ecosystem of news in the communities in which they operate. Well, that's a lot less likely when you go down from 40 reporters to 25 reporters to 17 reporters to 8 reporters, which is pick a name out of the hat, a cycle that happens at a lot of places around the country and a lot of places around downstate Illinois as well. You're just seeing an incredible diminution of the ability of these news organizations to live up to the values that I think that the people who work there often still hold. And sometimes these places do great work despite rather than because of the ownership they have.
Yeah, you mentioned buildings being sold in the State Journal Register in Springfield, which is a gatehouse or now Gannett newspaper, recently auctioned off its building. It's going to become in part the morgue for the county, which there is a metaphor there, I think.
That's some rough imagery there.
Yeah, we're almost out of time, but Anne-Marie Lipinski, you told one of our producers that we are paying for the absence of local news coverage. What did you mean by that?
Well, when local newspapers shutter, and as David said, they are the source for most local news in most communities, a lot of businesses treat that as a green light for corruption. There's research that shows that there are then increased violations, including financial fraud, pollution, workplace safety violations. Which kind of upends the myth of a local newspaper, right, is beholden to local businesses and timid about exposing wrongdoing. Nothing really could be further from the truth. There's evidence that shows that, you know, when newspapers close, government salaries increase, deficits rise, the cost of borrowing rises. So, you know, you sometimes hear people say, I'm canceling my subscription because I want to save the money. There is a cost to closing down a newspaper. It's a cost the entire community pays and will continue to pay. And I think we're only just starting to appreciate the extent to which this is going to be, I think, not just from a community perspective, devastating to some areas, but also financially very, very damaging.
Anne-Marie Lipinski is curator of the Nieman Foundation for Journalism at Harvard University and former editor-in-chief at the Chicago Tribune. We've also been speaking with David Folkenflik, media correspondent for NPR News. Anne-Marie, David, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st.
You bet.
Thank you, Brian.